I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is your weekly dose of Tasting Room Radio. We have three very interesting guests joining us. Restaurateur Brigitte Rey, Anthony Buchanan, wonderful winemaker. And we're going to start with Sandra Ofield. You can find all the details for the show, all the information and the links at tastingroomradio.com or mulliganstew.ca. The last story of the day will be with a great friend, Brigitte Rey, from Orto Artisan Pasta and Bad Dog Bread in North Vancouver. It's right half a block away from Everything Wine in North Vancouver. It is really good. It's an amazing Italian kitchen and shares a building with Bad Dog Bread. Saturday morning, you want to be at Bad Dog Bread early. Get the cinnamon buns. Many, many, many people know Brigitte from Front of House at Le Regalade, Marine Drive, foot of 22nd in West Vancouver, especially on New Year's Eve. And then she opened a secondary restaurant in Kitsilano called La Cigale. However, this is the room right here. Orto Artisan Pasta, fabulous wine list, and a kitchen that's very open. You can watch all of the meals being cooked. There's a buzz in the room. It's wonderful. Patio on the outside in this day and age. So we're going to welcome back Brigitte Rey to Tasting Room Radio. We start the show with Sandra Ofield, who was the co-owner and the winemaker at Tinhorn Creek. They parted ways. Sandra has been, frankly, she can do anything she wants. She now, with her husband, has a consultancy business called Elysian Projects. And if, well, as she explains, if you're a young winery and you need mentorship, Elysian is the business you want to head for. However, this visit is the first, I hope, of many. I just wanted to hear the voice of Sandra Ofield on the show talking about our industry, the restaurant and winery industry in British Columbia. And so, and she can say anything she wants. She can fire off F-bombs if she wants. It's her segment. So it's the start of what I hope will be a long and prosperous segment with Sandra Ofield. And then a two-part conversation with Anthony Buchanan, a winemaker that will be the future of wines in BC and in Canada. He's that good. He makes wines for Anthony Buchanan, obviously, but also has consulted at Desert Hills and Ursa Major. I will tell you this. The first wine I tasted by him this year was a Pinot Blanc. I don't jump up and down for a Pinot Blanc. This was the best Pinot Blanc I have ever tasted in Canada. A Pinot Blanc. Who knew? Anthony Buchanan in the second and third segments of today's show. Welcome aboard. Please stay safe. Wash your damn hands. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch, who are now officially open. They offer two new releases from Crown and Thieves, The Winemaker's Wench, which is a crisp, aromatic summer slugger, and also an unfiltered rosé titled Pinky Blinder. You can find these wines and The Hatch at Black Swift, 2345 Bouchery Road, Kelowna, and hatchwines.com. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. This is an experiment, a human experiment, a technical experiment, but I'm thrilled to announce that Sandra Ofield has joined me on Zoom and on Tasting Room, the audio portion. Hello, Sandra.
Hello.
You're in front of, but you're doing the, is that just a photo behind you or is that a real bookcase?
No, it's a real bookcase. But actually, what you should be seeing is the view I'm looking at is unbelievable.
Well, mine's pretty good, too. I'm looking at the Neuse Bay.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, fair enough. What do you
say? I'm looking at the, I'm above McIntyre Bluff looking at the valley.
Nobody's above McIntyre Bluff.
Well, my house is kind of on par with McIntyre Bluff.
Yeah. McIntyre Bluff is glacial. Oh, my God. Okay, I was going to, I pulled up on my screen. Where did I find you? I found you, or no, I got rid of it. Okay. I was trying to, I know where it is. Hold on a second. Oh my God, this is just compelling. I looked up Elysian Projects. And,
yes.
And so you can describe what it is, but this way I can actually introduce you as Canada's 100 most powerful women, Canada's safest employer, a BC Wine Industry Founders Award 2016, BC Restaurant Hall of Fame 2018, and a founder of hashtag BC Wine Chat on Twitter. First of all, Elysian Projects, you and your husband.
Oh, I'm good. Just We're good. We got a barking dog.
No, I mean, but the projects. Tell me about the projects.
Well, I'm a consultant in the wine industry now. I've been doing that for a little over 2.5 years. And it's really, you know, my husband and I kind of do what wineries are looking for us to do. Like, you know, we've done so much in the industry that we don't go out there and say we do one, two, or three things. Yeah. It really has to do with what the mainly small wineries have been looking for help with.
Help in planting soil?
No, it's much more along the business side of running their business. So the financial planning, you know, succession planning, putting in systems for your people, right, for your employees, because most small wineries don't, you know, really know how to hire properly or terminate properly or give progress bonuses to their employees, things like that. And then also definitely along the lines of health and safety, because that's just one of my things that I love. And then lastly, you know, kind of a bit on the whole marketing side of things.
Did you say how to terminate properly?
Yeah.
You have some history there. All right. I'm happy for that. And tell me about BC Wine Chat. How's it going?
Yeah, I think we're like 8.5 years in. I haven't earned a dime off that thing yet, but someday maybe.
And how large does the group get at times?
It's always hard to tell, because I think a lot of people go on and they don't say that they're there. So we definitely have a lot of lurkers. Some topics bring people out more than others. And of course we always have a core group of people that seems to be on, but I mean, I'd say on any given week, we've got upwards of about 50 people on there.
Sandra Ofield, my guest here. Sandra, something went by, a press release went by. Was it a charity event, a fundraiser?
It's called Fortify, and it's again meant to give business help to small artisan beverage producers. So not only wineries, but craft breweries, cideries, and distilleries. And the announcement was that we're going virtual this year. So we're still having the conference with a trade show, but we're using a virtual platform.
What can you possibly tell them about how to survive this pandemic, this time?
Well, to be honest with you, we want the information has always been really in the weeds, very practical. And so I think what we're going to do is I'm going to find some speakers that can speak to many topics, and then we'll refine it as we get closer to November. So, you know, I certainly can't pick a topic right now, because in November, I don't really know what is going to be on people's minds the most.
Sandra Ofield, my guest here. Well, did you come up with a title for this?
Just one day drinking wine. You know, we were trying to think of a way to prop up, again, at the time it was mostly the wineries, but for sure the distilleries and cideries have come along as well. And, everybody is always talking about the product, and that's fair. The product is super important, but the reason why a lot of these businesses go under or aren't successful is because of not the product side of things, like how they treat their employees, or how they, how they have no succession plan, or how they save cash during COVID and things like that. But for sure, I would say, you know, the nuts and bolts of how to actually run a business when you're kind of an artist at heart is really needed by a lot of these companies. So, you know, when we started it, we wanted to think of a way to prop them up, and we came up with the word fortify, and then it, of course, had a few meanings, and so we were good with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sandra Ofield. So Sandra, the headline over the last couple of days, I was going to go to the one big question, but let's go to this one.
Okay.
Unsworth. Purchased by major movers and shakers from Napa, Sonoma.
Yeah, I think it's, so first of all, I mean, Tim and Chris and the whole gang there, they're just amazing people. So from a personal perspective, you know, when you're looking to sell your business, it's always great when you can do that, because that's not a foregone conclusion in these days right now with so much uncertainty. And, you know, I think what every winery deserves in this province is a graceful exit.
Yeah.
You know, a graceful turnover. And that's really what they've been able to achieve. So it's great that it's a foreign investment, I think. It'll add something new to the industry. I love that it's on Vancouver Island because Vancouver Island is spectacular and so great. And then, of course, I just love the people at Unsworth so much. So I think it's all over is awesome.
I asked Chris Turek yesterday and then Randy Ullum yesterday as well about why Barbara Banky, who's, of course, Jess Jackson's widow, and her daughter, Julia Jackson, why they would go by Napa, Sonoma, Oregon, Washington to get to BC and to Vancouver Island and that piece of land. What was it? I'm dying to ask them. I wonder what the attraction was. And secondly, what do they, how much better can they make us?
Exactly. And, you know, maybe it's because a couple royals have passed over a few countries as well and are making their way on Vancouver Island. Who knows?
but I mean, you know that they'll bring expertise to it and they'll certainly draw attention to the Cowichan Valley. You know that.
Absolutely. And again, for me, like, you know, the fact that, you know, this is not a big corporate takeover. It's really a, you know, for me, a really great
is one family to another
that they're going to go through, and you know, from my perspective, I think that's where I'd like to see some of the, you know, some of the wineries that are for sale right now move to, which would be you know, looking for buyers elsewhere.
Hmm. Can you remember the last time, or has there been a time when a high profile California winery bought into a BC wine?
No, but I do remember a rumor many years ago in the early 2000s that Tinhorn Creek had been sold to Gallo Wines once because I had brought up a friend of mine who worked at Gallo at the time. So, you know, that we let that rumor go for a while because we thought that was hilarious. but no, I can't remember, but I do know of other deals in the works right now. And some of them are with, you know, investors from outside Canada. And I think that's also very positive.
Okay, Sandra, outside of just that headline, the state, this is the big question, and we can do the whole session right now on this one. The state of BC, well, restaurants and wineries.
Yeah. Well, it's hard. I mean, it's hard out there right now, and it's going to get progressively harder as we start going further into this. I mean, I understand that people are obviously coming out. I was at three tasting rooms this weekend. I felt very safe at all of them. But, you know, that being said, they've been through an incredibly difficult time. Some of them have made more money than what they've ever made before in the first quarter of the year because they really hit the direct to consumer sales pretty hard.
Yep.
And, you know, that made up for a lot of the losses that they would start seeing in maybe June and July. But, you know, it is really hard for a lot of the small wineries. They rely, you know, 60 to 80% or more on what's coming in through their front door. Let's hope that's, you know, it still exists this summer. Yeah.
And you still believe in small wineries, obviously. I know that. And you champion.
Well, you know, I mean, even though I was at a winery that was what I would consider a medium size, most of my friends were at small wineries and I, you know, I've always really identified with them. Certainly since our winery was sold, you know, I haven't put myself out there as a consultant that only works with small wineries, but to be frank, it's the small wineries that have gravitated towards our services. And so I've learned an awful lot more about them than I ever knew before. And I have a really great appreciation for them. And I tend to, you know, we're even doing the chat on it tonight. I tend to feel that the, you know, the small wineries are the drivers of this industry. And everyone seems to worry about consolidation, but when you look at it, really, there's only 20 or 30 wineries that have, you know, 20 plus wineries that have been consolidated with the large three wineries. There's still over 300 small wineries in this province. And And they are by far the drivers, I think, of innovation, of the ability to pivot quickly and during change. The things that they don't have is they don't have the resources or the money to, you know, help wrap their hands around their business a lot better or around their employees a lot better. So I think if they just get a little bit of help in those areas, they're pretty unstoppable.
What's the new normal going to be like, Sandra?
Well, I mean, I've seen glimpses of some pretty great wineries in the last few months that have decided maybe to, they're in the process of building and they're thinking of maybe not even building a tasting room. I mean, these are young people getting into the industry that are actually starting to think about, you know, how can we get people to join our wine club, but we don't have a full tasting room. And, you know, I think what's so great about that is these young families, they're really thinking about what's important to the balance of their life at the start of their career. And, you know, if what's important to them is spending weekends with their kids, I highly recommend they don't open a tasting room.
Exactly.
Right. And so there's really neat things like that happening. I don't think we're going to go all direct to consumer, but I do think that wineries are starting to figure out a way that they can make money at a small, you know, at a small production size.
I'm about to do, as soon as I finish with you, I'm going to do an interview with Anthony Buchanan. Have you tasted his wines lately?
No.
Wow.
I haven't.
Here's the deal. He's got great wines. I had a Syrah last night, but I've never tasted a better Pinot Blanc. And I'm not a Pinot Blanc guy.
Yeah?
It was just astonishingly good.
Well, I went to a winery I went to Daydreamer on Naramata, and I was blown away this weekend by their Pinot Noir and their Riesling and their Chardonnay and it was in their Rosé. It was amazing. Yeah.
You know, it was funny. It was, who was I talking to? Oh, Randy Ellum. And we were talking about how the Vancouver Wine Festival just got in under the wire. They literally said goodbye, we're done, thank you, and it was game over. And so here they are coming up in March of next year. Who knows, it might be okay again. Although I can't imagine that tasting room being filled with people.
No, I mean, it's a little bit different, but like on a smaller, way smaller scale with our conference, I mean, that's when we immediately just said let's go virtual. And I would encourage the Vancouver Wine Festival, at the minimum, if they can't hold what is a traditional large festival, they pretty quickly pivot here and figure out how to do things in small groups at small restaurants and with an educational piece that replaces the main festival this year.
Okay, Sandra, a couple of quick questions. What's pissing you off these days?
Oh, my goodness. let's see. I'm a little frustrated with the amount of, well, first of all, there's some awesome positive changes that are happening with restaurants that I think are long, long overdue. But I still feel like the same thing is not happening in the wine industry. I want to see the wineries be able to get secondary tasting rooms, cooperative tasting rooms where regions can be able to combat some of their seasonality and relocate elsewhere during the winter months. But that's not my cross to bear. I'm not the head of the Wine Institute, but that to me is an obvious place we should be working on. Obviously, still being able to get our wine across country, as you and I have been working on that for over a decade, that's still not happening.
Are we any closer?
I mean, there's rumors right now that Ontario will be opening up on July 1st, but it's hard to know if that's going to happen until the actual day.
I saw a shot of John Claretti's go by. He was grinning and holding a bottle, and it was something about that restaurants will be able to order from stores soon.
They're hoping. I'm not so sure that that's happened yet with the with what John's talking about. I think they're looking at it for sure. But, just the fact that the restaurants are getting wholesale pricing, I think, is going to be a game changer for them.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah. I mean, I am seeing some of, and I know it's because of COVID, and I absolutely understand it. But one of the things that's happening right now is a lot of the larger wineries are letting go of a lot of really talented people. And that kind of has been happening for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And but on the plus side, I'm hoping that there's a lot of really talented people that some of the other smaller wineries can pick up as well and help up their game.
Exactly. What can we as the consumer do? How can we help?
I think the greatest sales are direct to consumers still for the wineries. I mean, they make the best margins out of them. Yeah. You don't have to get in your car and drive anywhere, and you can experience stuff from all over. So, you know, for me personally, I belong to 4 wine clubs, but I switch them out every year, kind of so that my cellar doesn't get a mono palate.
Okay.
And, you know, I think if you're already out in the Okanagan, you can tour around a little bit. If you're not, just find restaurants and places right in your area that you can go back out to.
Okay. Next time we talk, let's talk about the new normal, because everybody, I keep being asked and I don't have the answers. We need a title for this chat that we do. Can Lisi and Projects come up with maybe a title? Your marketing department?
I'll get that corner of my brain working.
When you have time, we'll come up with something that's befitting you. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good week.
Yeah, you too.
Stay safe. Bye.
Bye.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch, who are now officially open. They offer 2 new releases from Crown and Thieves, The Winemaker's Wench, which is a crisp, aromatic summer slugger, and also an unfiltered rosé titled Pinky Blinder. You can find these wines and The Hatch at Black Swift, 2345 Boucherie Road, Kelowna, and hatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Row 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Okay, first things first, remember Clippers is with a K. Shop online with them. Just go to shopclippers.ca. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. The suites are still open for business. Here's the latest news from Orofino. This is such great news. They are open for tastings. And Row 14 at Clippers is back. They're open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. You want to write them, info@row14.ca. Tasting Room Radio, Terry David Mulligan. You have heard me talk about winemaker Anthony Buchanan even before Garage East of 2019. Welcome to Tasting Room Radio, and I would ask how you and your family are doing. Are they safe? Are they well?
Thank you. Doing quite well. It's been a big change, obviously, for everybody, and it's obviously living through the eyes of your children. It's tough when they can't go to school and see their friends, and they can only, as brother and sister, they can only hang out with each other so long before they start terrorizing the house. But eagerly anticipate and hope that this has a ending in sight pretty soon.
Anthony, I love the wines that you're making, and I want people to know about them, if that's okay, if I can blab a bit.
Please do, yes.
Thank you. You were a hairdresser, but then you ended up at Church and State on Vancouver Island with Jimmy Faulkner. And did that set the bug in you? Did that make you just want to push forward?
Absolutely. So that was in 2008 when I started at Church and State, working with Jim Faulkner. But my first bit of hands-on experience was in 2007. I worked for Blue Mountain for a harvest. Mm-hmm. And at that point, that was really kind of just solidified that this is the path that I wanted to go on. I'd always been a wine drinker and kind of a foodie, and, you know, they both go hand in hand. So it was a really easy decision for me. I was at a particular point in my life where, you know, I'd been hairdressing for 20 years. I had my own hair salon in Victoria that was very successful for 11 years. And it was time for me to sort of go back to school and learn something entirely different. You know, going from working in a salon, wearing nice clothes to, you know, being pretty much becoming a farmer was a really exciting new chapter for me. But definitely when I started working with Jim at Church and State on Vancouver Island, it really opened my eyes, and I knew that I had to push forward and eventually get to the Okanagan, and this is where all the action was really happening at that particular time. 2008.
But first, you went to Washington State, right?
Yeah. Got into Washington State, did the Enology program there, and got into the Okanagan shortly after graduation.
Did Michael Barche find you, or did you find him?
Actually, it was a gentleman by the name of James Kluhr. He's the owner of Fine Vintage.
Sure.
He was actively a general manager for a winery that was in some, I guess we'll call them, dire straits at the time. Mike Barche was involved as a consultant. So James emailed me and said, hey, there's an interesting job that could be really good for you to get your foot in the door up here. And I'm working with a consulting winemaker by the name of Michael Barche. Have you heard of him? I said, yeah, actually, I have. I've been to a few winemakers' dinners with him, and I applied for the job, and I just got along with everyone really well there. And so that was a very instrumental part of my career so far.
Now, you can find Anthony Buchanan Wines. You just have to keep an eye up. There's a new label. Tell us about that new label, the two hands on the front.
So, this is our third or fourth label concept. Since 2014 was our first vintage for AB Wines. And there was, my wife and I were never really super happy with the label matching the wines and kind of my mission statement and my philosophy. There was a little bit of a disconnect, and we kind of heard that throughout the community of winemakers and friends that we have, that they kind of felt that the label didn't really suit me or what I'm trying to achieve in the cellar. So earlier this year, we sort of crossed paths with Leanne Frost from Town Hall Brands in Vancouver, and I've kind of seen a number of labels that they've created over the last few years and really liked her as a person. So she reached out to me and said, hey, if you're interested in doing a sort of a refresh with your label, we'd love the opportunity. So it was a no-brainer for us. My wife and I decided, yes, let's do it. I really wanted this natural feeling, this organic feeling with the front label. So the hands basically represent the harvesting and the tending of the vines. And obviously once the fruit is harvested, it's the shaping of the grapes into wine. And obviously the sun sort of reflects life and photosynthesis. So it kind of just encompasses the whole process, and it's really, really farm-to-table, very organic feeling, and I think it really reflects the wines a lot better now.
Okay, Anthony Buchanan is the winemaker, strangely enough, at Anthony Buchanan Wines, and I hold in my hand the, what do they call it, the key to the highway, because it was the Pinot Blanc, the Lawson Pinot Blanc.
Lawson's my son.
Okay, there
so,
you go.
We wanted to bring the kids into the family business as well. So we decided to put Ashlyn, our daughter,
on the Pinot Noir,
and then Lawson got the Pinot Blanc. So two of my favorite wines to drink. So
they'll appreciate it later on.
Absolutely.
Now here's the deal: Pinot Blanc, as you well know, was touted by Barbara as the grape to watch. Maybe 7 years ago, five, 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I tasted some really very average Pinot Blancs. This is not average. How have you created this Pinot Blanc? And how important was it to you to get it right?
Well, I guess I sort of have to thank Blue Mountain for that, because I've always really appreciated the style that they produce. Obviously, first and foremost, it starts in the vineyard. And it's taken me, 2015 was the first vintage that I made Pinot Blanc for AB Wines. And 2018, it really started to sort of take shape. I've been working with the same vineyard, so I kind of got to know a little bit of the subtleties that the site was sort of expressing, and wanted to make more of a sort of a unfined, unfiltered version. So this was all 100% barrel fermented. Getting the barrel proportions right between new third fill and neutral was key factor in sort of way the wine is designed. 100% natural ferment, natural mallow, a little bit of batonnage, a little stirring of the lees. And basically it was seven months in oak before being bottled, unfined, and unfiltered. So it was kind of a combination of just sort of learning the site, kind of trial and error. You learn from your mistakes. I really like the combination of the sort of the barrel ferment. It works really well. It really enhances the creaminess and the mouthfeel. The texture is off the charts, but it still has this very expressive aromatic profile as well. Like it's a really, you could drink on its own. It's very food friendly. It's quite versatile.
No, it's food. It also reminds me that I have to start looking around for my winter whites. Those wines with texture. This is one of them right here.
Yep. Absolutely.
And I love the barrel program. New oak.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there was 20% new oak.
Do you remember the price point?
The Pinot Blanc is $17.99.
Thank you. How many cases?
Yeah. That particular vintage was 113 cases produced.
More, please. Thank you. A couple of quick things here with your whites. The Viognier. The 2019 Viognier.
Yes.
You start by describing it as, I don't want to get into high alcohol or syrupy Viognier. What Viognier do you want?
Something a little more old school. There's a big trend that's sort of taking shape right now globally with sort of lower alcohol wines. People are sort of getting away from that big in-your-face, high alcohol, really high extraction of big tropical fruits. There's obviously a time and a place for those wines, but for me right now, I wanted wines that are, I guess we can call them chuggable, wines that you can just open, enjoy. You don't have to pair them with food. But it was nice. Mainly, sort of, something that's very refreshing. So there is, on the nose, you definitely know that it is Viognier with that apricot sort of orange blossom kind of characteristic.
Thank you.
It's just not that thick, syrupy, 13.5-14% alcohol fruit bomb.
Does it still come out Canada Day?
July 1st, we'll be releasing that to the public.
And Snafu comes out the same day?
Snafu comes out, and we also have a red blend called Fubar that's coming out. Okay. So, with three new wines.
We'll get to Fubar in just a second. I love that. Now, Snafu, you say you wanted to make something European, but what was it in the European style that you wanted to capture?
So I've really been on this Austrian kick lately. I've been drinking a lot of wines from Austria and follow a couple of natural winemakers there that really is sort of have a lot of admiration and respect for. They seem just to be sort of a little bit ahead of us in terms of what they're doing in the vineyards and cellars. So it was something that, there's a lot of white blends and red blends on the market right now, but I wanted to sort of create something that was completely different that I personally wanted to stand behind and was really excited to help in the vineyard, and of course, once it got into the winery to create in the cellar as well. So they're just really sort of wines that are very light, refreshing, low alcohol. They don't fatigue the palate. You can drink a lot of them. They're just pleasurable, fun wines that you don't have to sit around and intellectualize. So it's sort of just a fun drink to have in your hand.
We're talking Anthony Buchanan wine, strangely enough, because we're talking to Anthony Buchanan. Now, the thing about Snafu is, I like the fact that it was European and biodynamic, and there's some Sauvignon Blanc in there, and some Chard. There's some Muscat and Viognier. But what really caught my eye was the fact that one of the vineyards was named Gultz, named after
Correct.
Robert Gultz.
Yeah.
There's a grower.
Yep. There's a guy that's been around for a long time, and he's got an absolutely fantastic reputation, and this is from his son's Nathan vineyard. So, I've been down in the Similkameen Valley. So, I worked in the Similkameen for 4 or 5 years and really got to know a lot of the vineyards down there, and they make some exceptional fruit down there. So, I jumped at the opportunity to purchase some fruit from him last year and hoping to do so this year.
Okay, I knew this would be a two-parter. He's Anthony Buchanan, and we'll be back with part two of the Reds right after this. This is Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Row 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Okay, first things first, Remember, Clippers is with a K. Shop online with them. Just go to shopclippers.ca. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. The suites are still open for business. Here's the latest news from Orofino. This is such great news. They are open for tastings. And Row 14 at Clippers is back. They're open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. You want to write them, info@row14.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth in the Cowichan Valley, because all of the wineries in the Cowichan, and actually across Canada, have been asked to close. This is what we're proposing to do. Free shipping on case orders, as per usual. And someone at the winery is available for drive-through pickups. It's a great idea. And the restaurant at Unsworth is open Thursday to Sunday for dine-in and takeout. And the new easygoing white blend Island Melody is now available at Save On Food and their wine locations. Please go to their website, unsworthvineyards.com. I'm Terry David Mulligan. He's Anthony Buchanan. This is part two of our conversation about his wines for 2019-2020. We'll talk about 2020 in a minute. So, foobar, which, do you have to explain what foobar means?
I don't know if I'm allowed to, but foobar and snafu are old military terms.
Sure.
So foobar would be basically effed up beyond all recognition.
Exactly.
And then snafu, a situation normal, all effed up.
Yep.
So these are kind of just fun terms. So basically my sort of marketing on it is like, you're going to start with the snafu, you know, the situation's going to be normal after a few bottles of that. And then once you get into the foobar, that's when it gets really messy and ugly. You're going to be a little bit effed up after.
So where did the Beaujolais influence come from?
Basically, I'm a huge Beaujolais fan. Actually, we just had in the hotel last night, we had a nice bottle of Morgon last night. So it's a grape that Gamay that I've always really appreciated. I love the fact that the wines are really fruity and textural and generally low alcohol, but the last few years the alcohols have creeped up in Beaujolais. But it was more so that kind of concept, that really textural sort of high tone fruity components. I follow a lot of the natural guys, so that was the building blocks from the sort of the standpoint of making the wine. Mm-hmm. Even though it's Zweigelt was the first varietal, and then we've got Gamay, Pinot Noir, and then of course a little bit of Syrah and Muscat in the blend as well. So all sort of varieties that I really like to work with personally in the cellar and in the vineyards. Mm-hmm. But yeah, something really fruity, textural, kind of falling that same, you know, it's not going to fatigue the palate. Just really, really a fun wine to drink.
I harvested Zweigelt for a couple of years. I came to appreciate it very much. I love that grape. Speaking of grapes, you made your rosé from Malbec, and you described it as funky, which again got my attention. What's funky about it?
It's this is the sort of the least hands-on that I've been with any of the wines that I've produced. So basically the grapes were harvested. We threw them into a variable top tank. I put a little bit of dry ice in the bottom and kind of just layered the dry ice throughout the grapes, sealed it up tight. And so we did a sort of a semi-carbonic cold maceration on it. And it's nothing added to this wine. It's a little bit of sulfur prior to bottling. And it's got this really funky aromatic profile to it. It's not that typical rosé that's got the really high tone red fruit. This is more black tea and currant. And there's this sort of mossy underbrush kind of characteristic that you're not really going to find a lot with a lot of rosés. It was 6 days on the skin, so it's going to have a little bit more color than traditional rosé, but it's more going along with all the wines in the portfolio. They are really big on mouthfeel and texture. I really find that really is more of the building blocks of a really good wine. But yeah, I think we sold out in 4 days of this wine. Mind you, only made 36 cases of it, but I think there's a real push for the public that they really want these kind of wines. They're different, they're unique, like where I'm not following a recipe at all. It's just like I see the fruit and I get these ideas on what I want to create. And I think it's a really interesting way to kind of go into a vintage. I don't have any preconceived notions of what I'm going to do. It's just what the fruit gives me, and away we go.
We loved it. It was a huge hit in our kitchen. We were we were supposed to sip. We ended up gulping. Okay, is that okay?
Absolutely, gulp away.
Quickly, we're going to hit the reds now. Syrah. I think it's important. Well, first of all, I had it last night. I loved it. Loved it.
Oh, great.
Loved it. The William Dean spec sheet. Tell me about the markings just off to the right hand side.
So, William Dean Syrah. So this is the first year that we've actually called it, gave it a name. So William is basically my grandfather, who I didn't get a chance to meet. Sadly, he passed away when my mom was 15 years old in Scotland. And Dean is my wife's father, who is a fantastic guy. Love him to death. He's been extremely supportive of our little wine business and two very important parts of our family. It just kind of a paying respect to them, and it's a really powerful wine. It's 100% whole cluster fermented, foot treaded, hands off in cellar pretty much as well. A little bit of 2% Viognier added to this, just to sort of give it some really beautiful aromatic and textural component as well.
Some nice new oak.
There's a 20% or 25% new oak. There was one barrel of American in this vintage, and I think that just sort of helps sort of spice it up and give it some really nice coconut vanilla characteristic. But it's not it's a wine that I wouldn't say is you're going to find a lot of oak on the nose. It really this there to sort of frame in the wine and kind of give it some support. But yeah, it's got all the characteristics that you look for in a Syrah.
And finally, Anthony, we get to the Pinot Noir of the Ashland, and again, it's not like anybody else's Pinot Noir. You have to accept it for what it is. It's very engaging, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a Pinot that just sort of does a drive through, this is not your Pinot. This will have you sit down and think about what's in your mouth. By the way, I wish I knew this. When I saw you at Garagis last year, it was the day after the Pinot Noir celebration. Were you also pouring at the Pinot Noir celebration?
I had no.
Okay.
Not there, no.
Did you go and taste any? I mean, have you done a tasting of some 30 or 35 Pinots just to see how different one is from the other?
I actually participated in the very first Pinot Noir celebration. When the Maher Family Vineyards hosted it.
Right.
So this, I forget how many years ago, but yeah, I have, and Pinot Noir is kind of my passion. We drink a lot of Pinot Noir. I try a lot of Pinot Noir. I'm very fortunate that being a winemaker, a lot of us like to trade wine. So I get an opportunity to try a lot of different Pinot Noirs from the Okanagan, and there's some really fantastic wines being produced right now.
Mm.
I know sometimes Pinot doesn't really get on the international scope, people seem to sort of not like a lot of BC Pinot Noir, but maybe they're not trying.
They ain't trying
in the right context, or I'm not really sure. But yeah, I've had a lot of Pinot Noirs from the Valley.
Wild ferment, unfiltered, unfined, meant to cellar.
Yes, this wine definitely with the acid structure and a little bit soft tannins. This, I think, definitely 10, 12 years, if it's cellared properly, will probably really start to shine, probably about maybe 5 years from now. But I think you'll get a good 10 plus years if cellared properly.
Hey, Anthony, I meant to ask you about the bubble program.
Yes. Yeah, we've in the last few years, we've been doing sparkling wine, the ancestral method or the ancient method. Last year, we produced Pet Nat, which seems to be quite popular with people. So those programs are not going to go anywhere. You may see something kind of funky and interesting coming from this vintage. I really like to work small lots. So the Method Ancestral, that'll be sort of the primary sparkling program. And then I'll probably have some fun with a couple of Pet Nats, maybe some co-ferments with some other type of fruit maybe coming this year. So it's a really fun thing to do. It keeps the seller staff engaged, and I just have a lot of fun doing it.
Okay, here's what I'm going to let you go with your family. Here's what I need to know. A couple of things. One is, tasting room open?
Unfortunately, we do not have a tasting room. Okay. So, yeah, the best way is for people to just contact us directly and to go onto our website, so anthonybuchananwines.ca. There's a link there to send us an email, and there's all the current releases are available with some nice descriptions of the wines, the pricing. Right now, we ship across Canada, generally for free right now, if it's six bottles or more. And there's some really good wine stores that are carrying our products throughout Vancouver. But just shoot us an email. That's the best way to get a hold of us.
Okay, and here is the speed round, Anthony. Let's see how good you are in the marketing department. I'm going to name the release. Tell me the price and the case numbers that you made, which tells us how hard we have to go looking. Okay, you ready?
Okay.
The Wild Ferment Brut 2019.
I believe it's 2690, and there was 207 cases produced.
The 2019 Viognier.
What are we charging for? I don't know what we're charging for that. I should get my wife to come on the phone.
Okay.
But there's 83 cases produced. I think it's 2290. 2390, somewhere around there.
Also coming out Canada Day, the Snafu 2019.
Snafu, we produced, I think, about 202 cases, somewhere around there. And the price, I
ballpark.
Horrible. I don't
ballpark.
Know. I don't remember.
Okay.
24.
Fine. Fubar 2019.
197 cases produced. And we're looking at about $25.90 for that.
Also
for that
comes out Canada Day. All right. The rosé is sold out still? Yes?
Yes. Okay. Sold out. Done.
What did it cost?
Petnat sold out. The rosé was $18.99.
Fine. $18.99. 2018
Syrah was how much? 2018, $31.99.
Okay.
And we produced 113 cases of that.
And finally, the Pinot.
Pinot Noir, $31.99, and we have 201 cases produced from that vintage.
AnthonyBuchananWines.ca. No tasting room, no tour buses, no food program, just great wines. Anthony, I made a note to myself about Desert Hills, the winery, and Ursa Major. You had come in contact with them, and you have been consulting. Just give me a sense of those wines, because whatever you're making, whatever you're consulting, I want to know about.
Okay. For basically, my day job, my full-time day job, is the head winemaker for Desert Hills. So I started that back in 2016. And Rajan Tour, so this is Randy Tour's eldest son, basically had this great idea of coming up with his own pilot little project called Ursa Major Wines. So I was really fortunate enough to sort of be in the first ongoing stages of developing the brand and the wines. And Rajan, for the last couple of years, has sort of slowly sort of transitioned himself sort of as the sort of the head winemaker, and I'm just there sort of in the background just to guide and answer questions and sort of train him as a winemaker. So really interesting wines, low intervention wines for Ursa. A lot of skin contact for white wines, neutral barrels, just really sort of elegant, sort of really thirst-quenching wines that you can enjoy every day with or without fruit.
Are you doing single varietals or are you blending?
There's a couple single varietals, but we're sort of getting more into the last sort of starting in 2018. There's a lot of interesting blends being put together, but the early stages, you know, there was a lot of single varietals, Cab Sauv, a Syrah, Chardonnay, but now we're getting into sort of doing some really unique kind of blends, and they're really, really interesting concept wines.
And for Desert Hills?
For Desert Hills, you know, this is kind of the bread and butter. This is what pays the bills. You know, the winery's been around. This will be its 20th vintage in 2020. You know, we're roughly 10 to 14,000 cases, depending on grape supply for the vintage. But Gamay Noir probably is the number one wine, Mirage for that big Bordeaux style blend. But we're sort of, you know, we're able to do a lot of unique things too, and I've been able to sort of make some changes with the way the wines have been developed and grown in the vineyards.
Nice.
And some really, really exciting things happening. So
yeah, I'm glad that they were wise enough to put you together with their fruit, because that's Black Sage Road. That is ground zero.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a hot climate down there. So you're going to see mainly a lot of the big sort of Bordeaux reds being grown and produced on the Black Sage bench there down in Oliver. Yeah, it's really exciting to be a part of it. You know, we're not sort of resting on our laurels. We're always trying to push excellence, and I'm always trying to make the wines better each year. And what that means is, you know, you're always reinvesting in new equipment and new technologies. You know, for me personally, I'm going to training seminars. I'm talking to other winemakers, sharing each other's ideas and experiences. And it's just, you know, it's a very competitive industry here in BC. It's a small industry. And, you know, I try to pride myself in always learning things and trying new things. And so far, it's been a blast.
Thank you very much, Anthony.
Thank you very much, Jared.
Have a safe drive home.
We will.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth in the Cowichan Valley. Because all of the wineries in the Cowichan, and actually across Canada, have been asked to close, this is what we're proposing to do. Free shipping on case orders, as per usual, and someone at the winery is available for drive-through pickups. It's a great idea. And the restaurant at Unsworth is open Thursday to Sunday for dine-in and take-out. And the new easygoing white blend Island Melody is now available at Save On Food and their wine locations. Please go to their website, unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends at Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Road 13 has designed a new menu for seated wine tastings and vineyard experiences that make it easy to dig right in. Seating is limited, reservations are required, and good times are guaranteed. Make your reservation and make a date with Road 13. And remember, every Tuesday is Dog Day at Road 13 from 11 to 4, gourmet hot dogs paired with award-winning wines. You can find them at road13vineyards.com. My name is Molly Goon.
My name is Brigitte Rayet.
Oh, man.
In English, Brigitte Ray.
Brigitte Ray. Brigitte Ray is the owner of Orto Artisan Pasta. And I'll give you the address, 1600 McKay Road, North Vancouver. Basically, you know where everything wine is. It's around the corner. It's just across the street. Right there. It's just in the neighborhood. Just park in the neighborhood. You'll see the cars piled up trying to get into this place. Because, by the way, on the front of the restaurant, it says Bad Dog Bread. So that's why I've come. I've started there now. Hello, Brigitte.
Hello, Terry. Nice to see you.
Thank you. We had a wonderful meal here the other night. We're still talking about it. Tell me about Bad Dog Bread, first of all.
So this business here, this location, it's shared between two businesses. We have Orto, and I'm the owner of Orto Artisan Pasta, and Bad Dog Bread is the bakery, and Vadim is the owner of the Bad Dog Bread. We started together, that's 17 months ago. The story of this place is quite interesting. It was not for sale, not for lease, but one day I was walking in the neighborhood, had a beer at the Hurricane Grill, just next door, parked my car around there and walked in front of this place. And with my new husband, who is Italian, we looked at this place and we both had the same idea. That would be a great little place, Italian place. Problem was, not for sale, not for lease.
What was here then?
It was called Ethical Kitchen. It was a little organic cafe. Very simple. And so we tried to reach the owner. Not easy, but we did it. And I said, well, I love your place. Is there a way for me to meet you and talk about it? Maybe I can do something in the place. And she said, well, too bad. I just leased it to a baker. I said, holy macaroni. That's not a big deal. I said, well, the baker bakes at night. What about daytime? And she said, well, I'm here for lunch, but you can run the dinner. And I said, that's a deal. And that's how the idea started. After a few meetings, she said, you know what, I'm very busy. Why don't you take lunch too? So I just had to deal with the baker. We met and we said, let's take a chance. And the lady who was here is still in the building. She's at the back doing her kombucha, ethical kombucha. And Vadim, the baker, opens the place at 7 o'clock. 7 to 11, he's the only one here. Then 11, I start lunch. He carries on selling his bread until he's sold out. And I do lunch and dinner, and voila, it works well.
Is this European in concept? Would you find this a bit more in Europe, business sharing?
Right now, as it is in Europe, not so much. But if we talk about 50 years ago, in the little villages, it would be very common to see a coffee shop, a coffee place, that would be also selling bread. And even if you go back in time, most of the places were selling coals and then coffee, and there was always a little corner that was convenience store, was selling the basic product, and people were going there, and it was like a very social place to go. You know, people were having a coffee, also shopping, and they go. What is not really common is to have two owners that can stand each other for a long period of time, especially dealing with a French woman.
We know you, of course, and the audience would know you from La Régalade at 22nd and Marine Drive in West Vancouver.
And after La Régalade, then I opened another business in Kitsilano called La Cigale, and I run it for about 3-4 years. In the meantime, something great happened to me. I fall in love and I change my life with an Italian fellow. And I run for a bit of time a place after I sold my business called Café Sava in West Vancouver. And I found this place. And I said, okay, change husband, change restaurant, from French to Italian, let's do it.
What did you know of Italian cooking?
Well, I loved it. I have not so much knowledge in Italian cuisine that I have in French cuisine. So I learned a little bit, I read a little bit, and my husband is like my mentor on that. You know, he tells me all the secrets, and I was also helped a lot with my son, Steve, that we started the business with. He knew a little bit about Italian cuisine, and his fantastic background in French cuisine helped a lot. So we started both of us here, Steve and I, as a partner. Then Steve left last year. And it's a bit of a fusion between French and Italian cuisine here. So we manage, and people love the taste of it.
Yeah. It's kind of a French attitude. It is.
It is, yeah. Well, we can't help it.
So take us through a couple of the more popular items on the menu.
Well, what we need to really mention that is, first, all our pasta are made fresh here, handmade, and we are really working with our local suppliers. All the vegetables that we are serving are from farm around here. Right now we work a lot with the North Arm Farm in Pemberton, and also with the Vancouver Farmers Market that supply us all year long. On the top, in summer, we have this beautiful garden that we grow our vegetables. So everything that we grow is served on the plate. And we really try to support local farmers and organic farmers as much as we can. Yeah.
And what have we, the customer, made the most popular dish?
Well, we have two categories of dishes. We have the traditional pasta, like the bolognese, the carbonara. But we have also some interesting dishes, which are the fusion between French and Italian culture. And we go back sometimes to the famous regalade dishes, the short ribs, for example, cooked in a peppercorn sauce. So we will do a pasta with it. Every day we have a special, Yesterday night, for example, we had two different raviolis, one with crab, one with wild mushrooms. So I was looking at my menu and I was thinking, which dish would I take off to make something new? And actually, there is nothing to remove right now. Each of one is a good sale. We have to think about the vegetarian option also, so we have vegetarian dishes.
I had the cassavetti.
Oh, what a good pasta it is. So with a nice pork sausage, touch of fennel, little bit of spice, and some chili oil for some people that love it a little bit more spicy, that we make in-house.
By the way, just a heads up, there is one really great appetizer, San Daniel prosciutto and fresh Italian burrata. And it's assembled right on the edge of the kitchen so you can watch it. Comes on a long board. It's $24 and it's a meal in itself. And I love the fact that at the top of the page, of course, at Orto, is bad dog bread with caramelized onion butter and tapenade.
Oh, well, you know what? It became one of the most popular appetizer. People just take that as an appetizer. The bad dog bread has a nice selection, and we serve that with tapenade, olive oil, and caramelized onion butter.
Brigitte Ray is the owner of Orto Artisan Pasta, 1600 McKay Road, North Vancouver. And now, Brigitte, we come to the white wines and the red wines. Italian mostly?
Well, Italian, and I would say mostly French, because my knowledge in wine is mostly, I'm very comfortable with the French. I've got few Argentinian, but mostly French and Italian. It's a small selection. I don't have a lot of wines, but all the wines that I have, I really like them.
Thank you for the Sancerre.
Yes, thank Sancerre, of course. Sancerre.
Chablis.
Yes, that's my region. I'm from Burgundy originally. And most of the bottles are served by the glass. I would say 80% of the selection is served by the glass too.
Actually, it's interesting. The whites are more French. The reds seem to be the Italians.
Well, I think the French is better for white wine than the Italian. I still think that. But you cannot avoid the Barolo, the Amarone in Italy, and my house wine is Italian also. Yeah, small selection, and we make a point to serve all those wines in our small glasses as they do in Italy in the coffee shop or the bars. No fancy wine glasses here.
No fancy nothing, just great food.
No fancy nothing. If you look at my plates, they are all different. They are cute little plates that I get mostly from the Salvation Army, and we break them a lot, but they are so cute. People like this little touch. It's like a family style here. People have the feeling that they are inviting to a friend's place, and that's really what I like here.
Are you seeing people from Regalade days?
Oh, of course, yeah. People kind of like me. I don't know if they like the food or if they like me. But I would say about 70% are repeat customers from La Regalade, yeah.
All right, so those people that we've interested, when are you open? How many days?
So here we open 5 days a week. We're closed on Sunday, Monday. And we open lunch 11 to 3, dinner 5 to 9.
You have a website?
Orto Artisan Pasta.
OrtoArtisanPasta.com. Or maybe we can shorten that to just Orto.
Yes, I think you'll find me. Orto would be here. Orto, which means vegetable garden in Italian.
Really?
Really.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you, Terry. It has been a pleasure to see you here.
I love that you're in the neighborhood. I absolutely love this, and I want people to know about you. Brigitte Ray, Orto Artisan Pasta, 1600 McKay Road, North Vancouver, right around the corner from Everything Wine in North Vancouver, just off Marine Drive.
Thank you so much.
Can't wait for the deck to open. Thank you.
I can't either. Oh, it's going to be so nice.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends at Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Road 13 has designed a new menu for seated wine tastings and vineyard experiences that make it easy to dig right in. Seating is limited, reservations are required, and good times are guaranteed. Make your reservation and make a date with Road 13. And remember, every Tuesday is Dog Day at Road 13 from 11 to 4. Gourmet hot dogs paired with award-winning wines. You can find them at road13vineyards.com.